My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Now the runner goes, the pitch swung on, hit in the air to deep right field. Back goes Cole to the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. Unbelievable. A pinch hit, walk-off, two-run homer. And the Diamondbacks have scored 5 runs in the bottom of the 9th inning. And they have themselves one of the wins of the year for them.
Yeah, they were down 8-4. The D-backs were heading into the bottom of the 9th, facing Kyle Finnegan, all-star Kyle Finnegan, and he promptly in 6 batters gave up 5 hits, 5 runs, including that 2-run walk-off homer by Corbin Carroll. Andrew Golden was there for all of it last night out in Arizona. Andrew covers the Nats for the Washington Post. You can follow Andrew on X at Andrew C. Golden, and he joins us right now courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's a bad loss, but it's also an interesting one because Kyle Finnegan, right, Andrew, has had a couple of rough outings back-to-back since the All-Star game, even though he didn't make an appearance in the game. And I'm just wondering, will any of that affect anything that may or may not happen today?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think it's something that I tweeted about it last night. I think that when you look at what happened last night, I think this is kind of the reality a little bit of who Kyle Finnegan is. And I think both can be true. I think he's a great reliever. And I think that you're not second in the league in saves if you're not a great reliever. And so I think he's done that. But also the reality is Kyle Finnegan, when he gets hit really hard. And so when he has his bad outings, they can be really, really bad. And so I believe the stat is that, like, basically there's a stat called hard hit percentages, which is how often a guy hits a ball 95 miles per hour or harder. And opponents do that 51% of the time against Kyle Finnegan. So basically every other batter is hitting the ball over 95 miles per hour. So I think teams kind of knew that Kyle Finnegan gets hit hard. So I don't think that it necessarily changes how teams view him. I think teams kind of knew this is what they could potentially be getting. But it definitely isn't a great way to audition before you're about to get traded to give up 5 runs to the Diamondbacks in the way he did. But I think this is the reality of kind of who he is. But I still think he's a great reliever. I still think that he would net a good return. But I do think he kind of has some flaws, and I think that kind of came to light last night a little bit.
All right, before we get to what was done yesterday and what's been done, you know, actually over the last week and a half, do you think Finnegan will get dealt before the deadline tonight at 6?
I think he will. I think the reality is that teams are really going to want relievers right now. It's always the seller's market. And I think maybe some team that's really desperate to get a reliever, and I think that the Nationals will be able to take advantage of that. So I think he will. I think that there's the market for relievers is is always very active around this time, and so I think they'll get a deal that they can get done that they like.
All right, let's talk about these deals that they've done sort of in order. Actually, working backwards, let's go with the more recent, and that is Lane Thomas, who, by the way, was acquired for John Lester after Lester did, you know, hardly anything here at the end. And mm-hmm. the team got, what, 3 years out of him, and now they get three players back. Talk to us about the deal for Lane Thomas yesterday and who won it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it remains to be seen who won it, but I think when you look at it on the surface, it's a good deal for both sides. Obviously, the Guardians got a right fielder, and they got a right-handed bat, which they really needed, and the Nationals obviously got three prospects in return. And I think the reality is, and you kind of mentioned it when you're talking about value for players, the Nationals basically turned 16 starts of Don Lester into three controllable players who can really help them down the line. So I think it's a good return. I had a scout who I texted with yesterday. He's a big fan of Alex Clemmy. He's a second-round pickup last year as a lefty. And so he was a very big fan of him, said he'll be a stud. And so I think when you look at the return, there's Jose Tenya, who has played in the majors a little bit, but he's kind of blocked in a log jam that there was with Cleveland. So, but I think it's a good return. I think it works for both sides. I think the Nationals got a return for Lane that is the return for an everyday player. I think there's a question of whether they get a platoon value or an everyday player value. And based off what this looks like, it seems like they got a return for an everyday player. And so I think it was a good trade for both sides. I think the Nationals definitely benefited from, you know, getting three players who they could develop and potentially have them help at the big league level down the line.
You mentioned one of the players, Clemmy, the pitcher, who's, I think, number seven in the Cleveland organization in terms of prospects, 19 years old. And apparently can really throw. I mean, is the hope that they got a potential starter, a rotation starter in the future out of this deal? Or, you know, what is out of the three, he would seem to be the one that has the greatest potential. What is it?
Yes. I think the potential is that he's a frontline starter is what I've heard. I think that obviously has a fastball with good carry. He can top out at 99. He has a good curveball. He also has a slider and a changeup. So he has four pitches that are all developing. And so I think if he can really fine tune those and obviously have a repeatable delivery and have those mechanics, I think you're looking at hopefully what they hope to be. I think at front of the rotation starter. So I think that's kind of what's backing. I think that's what the ceiling is for him. And so I think that's what the Nationals are hoping for. He's already their number six prospect, right behind Cade Cavalli, just for perspective on how MLB.com views him. And so I think they're hoping for a really big return for him.
Andrew, real quickly, just summarize the Winker deal and the Hunter Harvey deal is now, you know, a week and a half or whatever old. But the Winker deal happened over the weekend. What'd they get back for Winker? Tell me about Tyler Stewart.
Yeah, Tyler Stewart. So he was drafted out of Southern Miss a couple seasons ago as he'd primarily been a reliever, but the Mets turned into a starter. And so he's currently in Double A. And so it's kind of interesting. I think he's a really good slider. He throws it like about 50% of the time. That's his go-to pitch. I think there's kind of a question about whether he will be a starter or maybe a long reliever or move to the bullpen in the future. I think I see him as a projection of moving to the bullpen at some point, but for now he's a starter. I think obviously you want to try guys out as a starter for as long as you can, and then once that doesn't work, then you kind of move into relief role. And so, but I expect him to be a reliever down the line for the Nationals, but maybe he can be a back of the rotation guy or a reliever. I think that's kind of my projection for him.
How good is Mike Rizzo at this? Like, where would you rank him among the general managers in the league?
I mean, he's up there when it comes to these trade deadline deals and getting returns that can help him in the future. And so, I don't think anybody can doubt that. And I think when you look at their deadline so far, I think you need to give credit to the front office for how they've been able to turn some guys who maybe they didn't have a ton of value and turn them to a ton of value. I mean, look at Hunter Harvey. He was a waiver claim who was injured for a while and, you know, looked like his career was kind of sputtering a little bit, but Nationals took a chance. And he obviously turned into Caden Wallace, who's an infielder, and then Caleb Lomavita, who they took with the 39th pick in this year's draft. With Winker, he signed to a minor league deal, and they get Tyler Stewart. And then, like I said, with Lane, you get 16 John Lester starts, and you turn him into three prospects. And so I think when you look at Mike Rizzo, one of his strengths is finding those diamonds in the rough and then maximizing them at the deadlines. I think Mike is great at this. He's done this before. Obviously, that Padres trade where you got Joe Ross and Trey Turner, he's done this before. So I don't think this is a surprise to anybody. And so we'll see how it plays out, but it definitely looks like he's kind of maximizing the value for some of these guys who maybe he didn't know were going to have a ton of value. I think you can make the same case for Kyle Finnegan, right? They signed him to a major league deal in 2020. He had no major league experience, and now look at the return you could potentially get for him too. So I think this is what Mike Rizzo does really well.
We're talking to Andrew Golden. He covers the Nats for the Washington Post. You know, on trade deadline days or the days leading up to it, sometimes you're surprised at seeing a name involved in a deal that ends up being a big deal, and then you realize, man, that guy got much better after he left here. Eric was involved in a huge trade yesterday, and yeah, he's really pitched well this year for Chicago. Just talk about him and the deal that he was involved in real quickly.
Yeah, that's a good deal for the Cardinals. I mean, it filled two needs, obviously. You're getting Faye, you're getting Tommy Pham. I honestly don't feel like when I look at that deal, like the White Sox did not get, I guess in my opinion, I don't think they got a ton for what they gave up. I mean, at least when you compare it to some of the other deals, even this Nationals deal with Lane Thomas, and you look at what they got in return, I personally kind of wonder like what the White Sox are doing with that deal, in all honesty. But yeah, but Eric Fetty, I think one of the things for him, I think he went to Korea and he won the Cy Young down there. For the Cy Young equivalent down there. I think when we talked to him, and he even talked to my coworker Jesse about this last year, like I think for him, like he kind of forgot what it was like being the guy, you know, kind of being the guy that teams could rely on and kind of being that guy. So I think it instilled new confidence in him. And when he came back to the big leagues, I think he's shown that, and I think he's developed himself into a nice big leaguer. He obviously changed his arsenal a little bit too. It's a little bit different from when he was with the Nationals, but it's a really good story of a guy who kind of took a chance for himself, went to the Korean League, kind of reinvented himself, and now is kind of a frontline starter for the Cardinals in the thick of the playoff race. So it's good for him. It's what he deserves for the talent, for the amount of time he put in to improve his game. So I've been really impressed with that, and I think the Cardinals did a great job in that trade. I think the Dodgers did too, and then, as I said, the White Sox, I'm a little confused by what their return was there.
I guess lastly, you expect Finnegan to get dealt. Anybody else before the deadline today?
Definitely Dylan Floro. He's on an expiring contract. They signed to a 1-year deal this offseason, taking a chance on him as well, and it paid dividends coming off of a down year. So definitely expecting to be traded. He's on a 1-year deal. Doesn't really fit with their timeline, so I would expect that. I think obviously the other two who could potentially be in the mix is Patrick Corbin. If somebody really wants to take a chance on him and they're willing to eat a lot of his contract, if the Nationals are willing to take on a lot of his contract, maybe there's a market for Patrick Corbin, but I wouldn't expect a ton. And then Derek Law would be the other one, just a controllable reliever. But I wouldn't expect either of those guys to be dealt. Definitely Floro, though, and then I think Finnegan's kind of the one that's kind of up in the air.
I mean, would somebody be looking at Corbin as just left-handed relief, you know, up for a contender?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that'd be kind of the value, right? And I think the other thing with Corbin to note, which is kind of a factor here too, is that he's a 10-5 player, so he has 10 years of major league service and has spent 5 years with the team, so he has an automatic no trade clause that goes into effect. So that's another factor too, is that like he has to be willing to accept a trade somewhere else, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I think, yeah, I think if there's any team that wanted him, maybe they believe that he could coming out of the bullpen and provide some innings, you know, down the stretch here. So I think that'd be the value in that. And so I don't know if there's going to be – I don't know if that value is worth it to give up, but I definitely did think it's potentially an option.
All right. I lied. Just maybe one or two more, because I was just thinking
as many as you need.
Well, I mean, James Wood now is, you know, 20-something games in since mm-hmm. being called up. There have been some moments, that's for sure. I mean, the game that he had the other day, you know, where he was 4-for-5 with 2 doubles and 2 RBIs when they rolled up like 14 runs in St. Louis was a big one. He's had some moments. Overall, you know, I'm looking to see game count. It looks like 24 games so far. 24 games in, how would you describe, you know, James Wood so far?
I think he looks like a rookie, right? I think he looks like a guy who's trying to figure it out. I think there's been some flashes of potential. Here's one thing I'll say. He's hitting the ball. He's hitting the ball so hard, which I think is, like, really, really impressive. His, like, average exit velocity is, like, kind of up there with, like, Soto and Judge's. So that is obviously a positive to look at. I think it's a matter of figuring out how the league is pitching him. I think a lot of teams, they're showing their respect early on. He's facing a lot of lefties, relievers or managers are making bullpen changes for left-handed relievers to face them. So, like, obviously when you have that amount of respect and you're just a rookie, like, that can kind of be an adjustment for sure. I think he's shown a couple of things. Like, I think he's shown at times that maybe he gets a little too aggressive and there are times where he's not aggressive enough. So I think trying to find that balance there, he strikes out a lot. And I think it's just partly because he's trying to figure out how guys are pitching him. I also will say he's hitting a lot of ground balls, which was kind of one of the knocks against him. And so I think that, that's still showing up, but I think it's gotten better. But I think you're seeing in recent games, he's starting to figure things out a little bit more. He's facing guys for the second time through, and he knows what they're trying to do against him. So I think that Kyle Gibson game was – I think that was a game where he had four hits. I think, like, he had faced Kyle before, and he had faced Sonny Gray before. So I think he's kind of starting to figure out, like, how teams are trying to pitch him. So I think he looks like a rookie, right? Like, I think there's a lot of potential, but obviously he's still trying to figure out how teams are going to approach him. And so – I've been impressed. I think he's hitting the ball hard. That's all you can ask for. I think now it's a matter of elevating it a little bit more and working with patience and play discipline. But he had two walks last night. So I think he's starting to kind of come into his own a little bit.
Thank you for doing this. Always appreciate it. Enjoy your trip out there.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Take care.
Follow Andrew. He'll have, you know, any of the news related to Nats deadline deals today at Andrew C. Golden. We'll have it all day long as well. The deadline today at 6. He expects Kyle Finnegan to get dealt after what was a disastrous performance last night in Arizona. When we come back, John Elway admitted the mistake of his front office career. That'll get us into a conversation about some of the mistakes made around here over the last 10 years. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh,
I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Like
I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
John Elway was playing in a golf event recently, and he regaled this story about playing with Josh Allen on a Barstool podcast. He was playing with Josh Allen as in the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. And if you recall, in the 2018 draft, Baker Mayfield went one, Saquon Barkley went two, Sam Darnold went three, Denzel Ward went four, Bradley Chubb went five, Quentin Nelson went six, and Josh Allen went seven. And Elway said as he was playing golf with Josh Allen, he said, quote, "I was playing with him and I was wondering how long is it going to take him to realize that I passed on him and took Bradley Chubb instead." It took him 2.5 holes before he mentioned it. He said, quote, "I loved him. It just didn't work out. He was my type. That was probably my biggest mistake of my GM days, was not taking Josh." You know, Elway really did struggle as an executive, you know, with the Broncos. You know, he was part of the Broncos executive group when they did go on to win the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. So having Peyton Manning there and winning a Super Bowl in 2016 was a big deal. But draft-wise, there were some struggles. And that 2018 draft, you know, they needed a quarterback. And he passed on the quarterback and took Chubb. And Allen, my God, if there's a quarterback in today's game that played like John Elway, it is Josh Allen. Mahomes, too, although I'm not sure anybody really plays like Mahomes. But Elway was Josh Allen and better then, long before Josh Allen. And he said in this on this podcast that he had still been shaken a little bit by his drafting of Paxton Lynch the year before, or 2 years before in the 2016 NFL draft when they drafted him in the first round out of Memphis. Another kind of big, you know, athletic, talented quarterback who never worked out. Remember, he was beaten out by Trevor Siemian, who was a seventh round selection. But he had signed Case Keenum during that offseason of the 2018 draft. And that was Keenum coming off that season in which he had the miraculous throw to Stephon Diggs to win the playoff game against the Saints, the miracle in Minnesota. Keenum had played well that year. Now, Minnesota's defense was a big part of why they won all those games, but they decided to let Keenum walk, and they signed you-know-who in that offseason to a massive first-ever fully guaranteed contract. And so Denver signed Keenum. So Elway admits, just a massive mistake. And, you know, he kind of admitted, too, you have to keep swinging. This is, you know, this is the case for any franchise that doesn't have the answer quarterback. You can't be worried about your previous mistakes. You should learn from them, but it's like the conversation we were having earlier about sort of what Dan Quinn said about the cornerback position. You have to have a short memory because you got to be right back out there, and the next play's got to be the one that you make, and you can't dwell on the past. And when you're trying to land that franchise quarterback, you can't worry about what you've done in the past. Because if that colors your thinking moving forward, you're going to miss out, as Denver did, on a quarterback that was 100% built like and played like Elway in Josh Allen. So I was thinking about, what are the biggest regrets that Washington's front office should have about, say, the last 10 years? You know, we'll just take it back a decade. It's not a hard 10-year rule if you've got something from 11 years ago or 12 years ago. But what do you think the biggest mistake, and we're going to keep this to football players, you know, not coaching hires, obviously not ownership or the hiring of Bruce or, you know, any of that. This is, in terms of football moves, what would be the biggest regrets of the franchise over the last 10 years? Look, I know most of you are probably expecting me to say the not signing of Kirk Cousins, and that would certainly be near the top of my list. By the way, this is a hindsight thing too. You know, you don't have to say this is how I felt in the moment. This is about hindsight, because that's what Elway's was. It's about hindsight. You know, Bradley Chubb was injured a lot of the time when he played in Denver. Ended up playing pretty well at times for Miami. But this is not about how you felt in the moment. It's a hindsight looking back. This was clearly their biggest mistake. I mean, for me, not getting ahead of the curve on a quarterback who was clearly a top half of the league NFL starter that you could win with if you could build around him. Not being aggressive and realizing that and having vision on that early was a big mistake. Lowballing him time after time was a big mistake. And then not trading him once you realized you didn't want him, because you never offered him a market level deal and he was going to move on. A big mistake was not trading him to the 49ers for a first-round pick minimum. You know, we've had people like Jay Gruden tell us it was multiple picks, including maybe multiple ones, that Kyle Shanahan was willing to part with for Kirk before 2017, before his final season. But that's actually not the biggest mistake. In hindsight, the biggest mistake is the 2020 draft, selecting Chase Young number 2 overall and not selecting Justin Herbert, or even for that matter, Tua Tagovailoa. But for me, it would be Justin Herbert. That would be the hindsight, John Elway, why didn't I draft Josh Allen and instead draft Bradley Chubb? That would be the single biggest mistake. They had a chance for a high-level, clear top 10 quarterback, in my opinion, and they selected Chase Young. Let me just say that in the moment, I wanted them to draft Chase Young. I wasn't a big fan of Herbert. And Tua was a concern for sure because of the hip injury. That would be number one for me in terms of the biggest looking back on regrets. In terms of personnel moves, you know, made or didn't make of, say, the last decade. Phone lines open, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I have a couple of others, and I think the whole Cousins debacle would be number two, because Herbert is potentially a much better lifetime quarterback than Cousins. He's got true kind of elite potential if it's, you know, cultivated, coached right, you know, supported with other personnel. So that would be number one. The Kirk debacle was a real reflection of not only organizational incompetence, organizational lack of vision, but maybe the all-time level of organizational pettiness. To not trade him for a first rounder, number two overall, and perhaps more, because you didn't want to see Kyle get a hold of Cousins, was, you know, the ultimate example of what Snyder did over and over again for 24 years, which is take a brick and smack himself in the head over and over again. Just stupidity and pettiness at the highest level. But I think Herbert not selecting him and picking Chase Young instead would be number one in the last, say, 10 years. Denton, what is it for you?
So number one is definitely the Chase Young thing. I think a very close second is the Carson Wentz thing. Bringing in Carson Wentz when everyone and their mother who paid attention knew that he wasn't a good quarterback, and using this like very cliche 27 touchdowns to 7 interceptions stat line that if you watched, especially the final two games of that season, I mean, the Colts went into Jacksonville when everybody in that stadium had a bag on their face because they hated the GM and lost and put up no offense, and then thinking he was just going to come here and resurrect the offense. That, I mean, one is the Justin Herbert, two or whoever, Chase Young at number two in 2020, but a very, very close second for me is the Carson Wentz thing.
I had Carson Wentz on my short list too. I mean, that was dumb. I mean, that was, and remember that, you know, Dan's still here, but now you got Rivera. He's got a level of control that people haven't had in a while because Dan's, you know, tied up in his own, or, you know, investigational underwear. And he not only does this trade, but he tries to sell it so hard when I'm not sure they've ever done anything where there were more red flags attached to it. Two organizations, one, a very good organization, said, we don't want anything to do with this guy. We're willing to part with him at outrageous expense to ourselves. Remember, when Philly traded him to Indianapolis, it was the largest cap hit in NFL history, dead cap hit, that they had to take. Indy sent a first rounder and dealt him after 1 year. And somehow, Ron and the organization, and by the way, a lot of our fans thought that they had landed the next coming of, you know, Johnny Unitas, for crying out loud. This guy was a major problem in two organizations. How was it ever going to work here in the most dysfunctional organization? You're 100% right. That was on my short list. It was Herbert, Chase Young instead of Herbert, one. The Cousins debacle, and then it, for me, number three on my list was Wentz maybe was the dumbest thing this organization's ever done with so much information to the contrary heading into that deal. It was so obvious that nobody wanted him, that the Colts were going to have to release him, and then Washington not only traded picks for him, but took the whole contract. I mean, the level of dumb in that deal, it's hard to really even describe it. I understand that ultimately, if he had gotten waived, he may not have picked Washington. Understood. You probably had to send a pick to Indy because it was more than anybody else was offering because no one else wanted him. So you send a pick. But then you send multiple picks and you eat the contract? I mean, Ron, as a personnel guy and whomever else was working with him in the moment, I mean, they just got completely taken to the cleaners on that deal. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. John Elway said his biggest, you know, personnel regret was drafting Bradley Chubb in front of Josh Allen in 2018. And when I read that this morning, I'm like, my God, Josh Allen, I've always said he's, you know, he played like Elway. Elway was better. I think Elway's one of the greatest that's ever done it. But he was spooked by it because of Paxton Lynch. I mean, can you imagine? Do you think the biggest front office player personnel move of, say, the last decade for this franchise. 301-230-0980. We'll take your calls next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
The Major League Baseball Nats lose to Arizona yesterday, 9-8 in walk-off fashion. That's had an 8-4 lead entering the bottom of the ninth. Gave up five runs, including two homers for the walk-off loss. Prior to the game, the Nationals traded Lane Thomas to the Cleveland Guardians for left-handed pitcher Alex Clemente, shortstop Rafael Ramirez, and infielder Jose Tenya. In the world of the Olympiad, Coco Gauff loses in straight sets to Dana Vikic of Croatia. Team USA women's basketball in action yesterday against Japan, 107-76. They blow past the Japanese. Asia Wilson had 24 points and 13 rebounds. And earlier this morning, Katie Ledecky cruised to victory in her 1,500-meter semi, swimming a time of 15 minutes and 47.43 seconds. And that's what's trending.
John Elway said, as a GM in Denver, the biggest mistake was not taking Josh Allen in the 2018 draft. He took Bradley Chubb instead. What's the biggest player personnel front office flub of, say, the last 10 or so years for our organization? The list is long. I understand that, which is why it makes a good call topic. My number one is drafting Chase Young instead of Justin Herbert. Again, this is not how we felt at the time, because I was actually very much in favor of drafting Chase Young. It's about hindsight. It's about looking back and saying, that's why it's a regret. You know, I should have done this. Number two for me is the entire Cousins debacle, which includes not trading him after you decided that you didn't want to offer him a legitimate deal. And instead, having him play out and enter free agency where you got a compensatory pick because you didn't want to trade him to Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. And then number three for me is Denton's number two, or maybe number one, close call, was just the trading for Carson Wentz, which was just silly when everything told you that nobody wanted him and nobody in two organizations was scared of trading him or getting rid of him, even at great cost to themselves. By the way, what Ross, is he in LA? Is Wentz in with Sean?
I don't.
Is he backing up Stafford?
I don't know if he's currently on a team. He definitely spent time. No, you're right. He is with the. No, he's on Kansas City. He was with LA last year. He's on.
Oh,
Kansas
that's
City.
Right. That's right. Andy Reid decided to take a swing at it. All right. Phone lines are open. They are packed. 301-230-0980. Give me your most memorable front office flub, or the worst one in your opinion. We'll start with Mike and Frederick. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. You already named the top two or maybe three, but this is a recent one, and it's not a lot of hindsight because a lot of people wanted it at the time. But just a couple years ago in the draft, Kyle Hamilton was there to be picked, and they traded down, drafted Dotson. The Ravens draft Hamilton. He's an all-pro, and the Ravens even had a second first-round pick, I think, over Dotson, the center from Iowa, who went to the Pro Bowl.
Right,
and, you know, not that Dotson's terrible, but Kyle Hamilton is a stud.
Listen, we all get a lot of these things wrong, and we get some of them right. I was a massive Kyle Hamilton fan. That's who I wanted them to take at 11. I didn't mind the trade back because I thought Dotson was a good player, and they picked up picks when New Orleans traded up. But Kyle Hamilton, in two short years, has essentially become one of the top two or three safeties in the sport. He is a dominant player. And yes, he was on my list as well, if callers didn't get to him. Mike, thanks for that. Let's go to Chris in Annapolis. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. I didn't know you're going to limit it to 10 years. You could always
it's add, all right.
Obviously, and anything with quarterbacks. But to me, the two quarterbacks that came to mind are a little older. The Donovan McNabb trade was crazy.
Yep.
And letting go of Brad Johnson. I mean, if we signed that guy and Marty still came here, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going back that far, you know, I had Charlie Casserly on the show recently, and, you know, he talked about that time frame in which, you know, Dan and Milstein, who were trying to buy the team, they didn't like the trade for Brad Johnson, but there was nothing they could do about it because they didn't own the team yet. They didn't take over the team until the summer, and it was too late to do anything about it. But remember, they brought in Jeff George in 2000 because that's who Dan wanted, and that just sabotaged the whole Brad Johnson scene here. It was a shame because Johnson had an incredible 1999. You're right. And the McNabb thing, you got to wonder when you're trading in the division with Andy Reid as to what you're really getting. But that never occurred to Dan because he just didn't think very smart when it came to strategic deals. And Mike didn't want that deal for what they had to give up, which was a second and a fourth, and they had to take the whole contract. He wanted Philadelphia to take back part of the contract. The quarterback he wanted that year was Mark Bulger, but he retired. Steve, go ahead.
I'm looking at last year's draft, and, you know, the jury's still out on it because it's only 1 year. But I thought they messed up when they took Forbes instead of taking Christian Gonzalez, who was picked by the Patriots with the next pick. And I'm just looking at it like Christian Gonzalez, he was rated as a top 10 pick all of that draft.
Yeah, he and Witherspoon were, yep.
Yeah, and Forbes wasn't – a lot of the mocks had him at late first round, even in the second round. And I you know, and I'm looking at it like if Bill Belichick takes the guy who – and we consider him, you know, bar none, the greatest defensive coach of all time, why are we not taking this guy? I mean, and like I said, the jury's still out because we got a new coaching staff. There's a lot of bad coaching last year. But I thought as far as getting the true lockdown number one corner – that was also rated as a top 10 pick consensus. I thought we dropped the ball right there. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So a couple of things about last year. Gonzalez and Witherspoon were clearly the top two corners in all of the mocks. But Forbes was a first-round projected corner. He was just the third of the three. I mean, let's not act like they reached massively for Forbes. He was a projected first rounder, as was the Maryland corner that went to the Giants. Deontay Banks. Yeah. But the other part of that New England situation is, remember, New England was picking 14th, and New England traded with Pittsburgh back to 17 behind Washington at 16 because they knew they could get Gonzalez there. The word was out that Washington was infatuated with Forbes. Now, I think Washington also, remember, was talking to Pittsburgh about a trade up, and I think that would have been for Lucas Van Ness. But the Packers picked him before. And it's very possible that they were looking at pass rusher and corner, but pass rusher because they understood that Chase Young wasn't going to be the answer there. Let's go to Alex in Alexandria. Alex, go ahead.
Yes, for me, there's several. The first one that still hurts me deeply is the one where they chose RG3 over the Shanahans. That was a big mistake right there.
Yeah, that's not a player personnel move. That's a coaching move. Dan Snyder essentially sided with RG3 over all of these coaches, great football minds in the building. Wasn't necessarily what I'm looking for, but I agree with you. What's your player personnel move?
Last year's pick. And the previous year with Chase Young and the late Haskins.
Haskins is on my list too. Thanks for the call. Haskins is on my list too. You know, God rest his soul. But obviously, the football people did not view him as a first round pick. And there's still a lot of question as to whether or not if Dan decided not to pick Dwayne Haskins, would he have been selected in the first round? A lot of people believe that he would not have gone until the second round. Let's go to Joe. Joe, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
What's up, Joe?
All right, so I got two. First one's a player. Right after we won the NFC East in 1999, in free agency, Snyder goes out and gets Deion Sanders, but we lose Brian Mitchell. And because under Snyder said that Brian Mitchell lost his step, and all Brian Mitchell did in his final game for us was return that kickoff for a touchdown in, yes, against Tampa Bay in the second round of playoffs.
Right.
And yet Deion, and I know Deion had four interceptions here, but he didn't do anything on special teams. Brian Mitchell did so well up in Philadelphia after he got released here. And the other one is not a player one, but a personnel move. And you and I have talked about this on so many occasions. After we won a playoff game in 2005, which I can't believe it's been almost 20 years for that to happen, Snyder and Vinny go out and get Al Saunders, and Joe Gibbs just relieved his play calling, even though Joe Gibbs was okay.
Well, Joe wanted Al Saunders too.
But it never worked, Kevin. I mean, Joe Gibbs, it just didn't work out. I mean, and you and I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, Joe thought the game after 2 years of calling plays had kind of passed him by, and he thought he needed somebody, and so Al Saunders came in with his 700 pages of playbook plays, and they weren't very good offensively after that. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Lap, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Thanks. Definitely the Hamilton, I wanted him. Gonzalez, I definitely wanted him. And I think a lot of people had the issue with the Davis pick. Because I thought that was just like out of left field, man. Like when we was watching the draft for my boys, I was just like, what the heck are they doing? And definitely the Justin Herbert draft. I had told you, and I've been on the record, I didn't want Chase Young. Everybody was raving about him. I wasn't impressed in college. I wasn't impressed in that Tampa Bay playoff game. And I wanted either Tua or Justin Herbert in that draft. So I was really disappointed. And I didn't see what everybody was saying with Chase from the jump. So those are my.
Well, if you watched him at Ohio State, yeah, there was a lot to see there. But obviously there were other, you know, issues. And let's face it, the injuries obviously didn't help either. But I don't think the injuries tell the whole Chase Young story. Thanks, Lap. Appreciate it. Anthony, finish it up for us.
What's up, Kevin?
What's up, Anthony? How you doing, man?
Hey, I agree with everyone's scenarios, but I got one for you that I didn't realize till about a month ago. Did you know that we selected De'Ami Brown over St. Brown from Detroit? Can you imagine if we had Terry McLaurin and St. Brown? We wouldn't have been thinking about Ayuk or nothing.
You're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, the boy from Detroit.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
If you can look it up, I read he wrote every receiver down that was drafted before him, and he mentioned De'Ami Brown. And that'd be his motivation.
Yeah, he went in the fourth round, 112 overall, and De'Ami went 82 overall in the third round. Yeah, well, you know, a lot of those players do that, right? They write down all the players at their position that got picked in front of them. Clinton Portis did that. A lot of guys did that. A lot of guys can remember, especially the guys picked in like the second or third round, the players that got picked in front of them. But yeah, it would have been great to have Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's turned into an absolute star. Thanks, Lap. Appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who called. Thanks to Steve Weish and Andrew Golden, who joined us on the show today. Back tomorrow, Chris Russell's next. John Elway said, as a GM in Denver, the biggest mistake was not taking Josh Allen in the 2018 draft. He took Bradley Chubb instead. What's the biggest player personnel front office flub of, say, the last 10 or so years for our organization? The list is long. I understand that, which is why it makes a good call topic. My number one is drafting Chase Young instead of Justin Herbert. Again, this is not how we felt at the time, because I was actually very much in favor of drafting Chase Young. It's about hindsight. It's about looking back and saying, that's why it's a regret. You know, I should have done this. Number two for me is the entire Cousins debacle, which includes not trading him after you decided that you didn't want to offer him a legitimate deal, and instead, you know, having him play out and enter free agency where you got a compensatory pick because you didn't want to trade him to Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. And then number three for me is Denton's number two, or maybe number one, close call, was just the trading for Carson Wentz, which was just silly when everything told you that nobody wanted him and nobody in two organizations was scared of trading him or getting rid of him, even at great cost to themselves. By the way, what Ross, is he in L.A.? Is Wentz in with Sean?
I don't.
Is he backing up Stafford?
Is he? I don't know if he's currently on a team. He definitely spent time. No, you're right. He is with No, he's on Kansas City. He was with L.A. last year. He's on.
Oh,
Kansas
that's
City.
Right. That's right. Andy Reid decided to take a swing at it. All right. Phone lines are open. They are packed. 301-230-0980. Give me your most memorable front office flub or the worst one in your opinion. We'll start with Mike and Frederick. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. You already named the top two or maybe three, but this is a recent one, and it's not a lot of hindsight because a lot of people wanted it at the time. But just a couple years ago in the draft, Kyle Hamilton was yep. there to be picked, and they traded down, drafted Dotson. The Ravens draft Hamilton. He's an all-pro. And the Ravens even had a second first-round pick, I think, over Dotson, the center from Iowa, who went to the Pro Bowl.
Right,
and, you know, not that Dotson's terrible, but Kyle Hamilton is a stud.
Listen, we all get a lot of these things wrong, and we get some of them right. I was a massive Kyle Hamilton fan. That's who I wanted them to take at 11. I didn't mind the trade back because I thought Dotson was a good player, and they picked up picks when New Orleans traded up. But Kyle Hamilton, in two short years, has essentially become one of the top two or three safeties in the sport. He is a dominant player. And, yes, he was on my list as well, if callers didn't get to him. Mike, thanks for that. Let's go to Chris in Annapolis. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. I didn't know you're going to limit it to 10 years. You could always
it's add, all right.
obviously, and anything with quarterbacks. But to me, the two quarterbacks that came to mind are a little older. The Donovan McNabb trade was crazy.
Yeah.
And letting go of Brad Johnson. I mean, if we signed that guy and Marty still came here, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going back that far, you know, I had Charlie Casserly on the show recently, and, you know, he talked about that time frame in which, you know, Dan and Milstein, who were trying to buy the team, they didn't like the trade for Brad Johnson, but there was nothing they could do about it because they didn't own the team yet. They didn't take over the team until the summer, and it was too late to do anything about it. But remember, they brought in Jeff George in 2000 because that's who Dan wanted, and that just sabotaged the whole Brad Johnson scene here. It was a shame because Johnson had an incredible 1999. You're right. And the McNabb thing, you got to wonder when you're trading in the division with Andy Reid as to what you're really getting. But that never occurred to Dan because he just didn't think very smart when it came to strategic deals. And Mike didn't want that deal for what they had to give up, which was a second and a fourth, and they had to take the whole contract. He wanted Philadelphia to take back part of the contract. The quarterback he wanted that year was Mark Bulger, but he retired. Steve, go ahead.
I'm looking at last year's draft, and, you know, the jury's still out on it because it's only 1 year. But I thought they messed up when they took Forbes instead of taking Christian Gonzalez, who was picked by the Patriots with the next pick. And I'm just looking at it like Christian Gonzalez, he was rated as a top 10 pick all of that draft.
Yeah, he and Witherspoon were, yep.
Yeah, and Forbes wasn't – a lot of the mocks had him at late first round, even in the second round. And I you know, and I'm looking at it like if Bill Belichick takes the guy who – and we consider him, you know, bar none, the greatest defensive coach of all time, why are we not taking this guy? I mean, like I said, the jury's still out because we got a new coaching staff. There's a lot of bad coaching last year. But I thought as far as getting the true lockdown number one corner that was also rated as a top 10 pick consensus, I thought we dropped the ball right there. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So a couple of things about last year. Gonzalez and Witherspoon were clearly the top two corners in all of the mocks. But Forbes was a first-round projected corner. He was just the third of the three. I mean, let's not act like they reached massively for Forbes. He was a projected first-rounder, as was the Maryland corner that went to the Giants, Deontay Banks. Deontay Banks, yeah. But the other part of that New England situation is, remember, New England was picking 14th, and New England traded with Pittsburgh back to 17 behind Washington at 16 because they knew they could get Gonzalez there. The word was out that Washington was infatuated with Forbes. Now, I think Washington also, remember, was talking to Pittsburgh about a trade-up, and I think that would have been for Lucas Van Ness. But the Packers picked him before. And it's very possible that they were looking at pass rusher and corner, but pass rusher because they understood that Chase Young wasn't going to be the answer there. Let's go to Alex in Alexandria. Alex, go ahead.
Yes, for me, there's several. The first one that still hurts me deeply is the one where they chose RG3 over the Shanahans. That was a big mistake right there.
Yeah, that's not a player personnel move. That's a coaching move. Dan Snyder essentially sided with RG3 over all of these coaches, great football minds in the building. Wasn't necessarily what I'm looking for, but I agree with you. What's your player personnel move?
Last year's pick and the previous year with Chase Young and the late Haskins.
Haskins is on my list too. Thanks for the call. Haskins is on my list too. You know, God rest his soul. But obviously, the football people did not view him as a first-round pick. And there's still a lot of question as to whether or not if Dan decided not to pick Dwayne Haskins, would he have been selected in the first round? A lot of people believe that he would not have gone until the second round. Let's go to Joe. Joe, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
What's up, Joe?
All right, so I got two. The first one is a player. Right after we won the NFC East in 1999, in free agency, Snyder goes out and gets Deion Sanders, but we lose Brian Mitchell. And because under Snyder said that Brian Mitchell lost his step and all Brian Mitchell did in his final game for us was return that kickoff for a touchdown against Tampa Bay in the second round of playoffs.
Right.
And yet Deion, and I know Deion had four interceptions here, but he didn't do anything on special teams. Brian Mitchell did so well in Philadelphia after he got released here. And the other one is not a player one, but a personnel move. And you and I have talked about this on so many occasions. After we won a playoff game in 2005, which I can't believe it's been almost 20 years for that to happen, Snyder and Vinny go out and get Al Saunders, and Joe Gibbs just relieved his play calling, even though Joe Gibbs was okay
with
the
decision. Well, Joe wanted Al Saunders, too.
But it never worked, Kevin. I mean, Joe Gibbs, it just didn't work out. I mean, and you and I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, Joe thought the game after 2 years of calling plays had kind of passed him by, and he thought he needed somebody, and so Al Saunders came in with his 700 pages of playbook plays, and they weren't very good offensively after that. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Lap, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Thanks. Definitely the Hamilton, I wanted him. Gonzalez, I definitely wanted him. And I think a lot of people had the issue with the Davis pick.
because I thought that was just like out of left field, man. Like I when we was watching the draft with my boys, I was just like, what the heck are they doing? And definitely the Justin Herbert draft. I had told you, and I've been on the record, I didn't want Chase Young. Everybody was raving about him. I wasn't impressed in college. I wasn't impressed in that Tampa Bay playoff game. And I wanted either Tua or Justin Herbert in that draft. So I was really disappointed. And I didn't see what everybody was saying with Chase from the jump. So those are my.
Well, if you watched him at Ohio State, yeah. There was a lot to see there. But obviously there were other, you know, issues. And let's face it, the injuries obviously didn't help either. But I don't think the injuries tell the whole Chase Young story. Thanks, Lap. Appreciate it. Anthony, finish it up for us.
What's up, Kevin?
What's up, Anthony? How you doing, man?
Hey, I agree with everyone's scenarios, but I got one for you that I didn't realize till about a month ago. Did you know that we selected De'Ami Brown over St. Brown from Detroit? Can you imagine if we had Terry McLaurin and St. Brown? We wouldn't have been thinking about Ayuk or nothing.
You're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, the boy from Detroit.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
If you can look it up, I read he wrote every receiver down that was drafted before him, and he mentioned De'Ami Brown. And that'd be his motivation.
Yeah, he went in the fourth round, 112 overall, and De'Ami went 82 overall in the third round. Yeah, well, you know, a lot of those players do that, right? They write down all the players at their position that got picked in front of them. Clinton Portis did that. A lot of guys did that. A lot of guys can remember, especially the guys picked in, like, the second or third round, the players that got picked in front of them. But, yeah, it would have been great to have Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's turned into an absolute star. Thanks, Lap. Appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who called. Thanks to Steve Weish and Andrew Golden, who joined us on the show today. Back tomorrow, Chris Russell's next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.